Joining me on Impact Catalyst is the Florida Director of the Environmental Defense Fund, Don Sheriffs. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Joe.
So the obligatory 101 on the Environmental Defense Fund, so folks that are watching will know what we're dealing with. Let's have it.
Sure. Environmental Defense Fund, commonly called EDF, despite the bad habit of acronyms, is a global environmental nonprofit organization. So we are all over the globe. We've got offices in India, China, the UK, you name it, really working on advancing solutions to the most challenging environmental problems. We do that really anchored in economics and science. And so a large segment of our 800 plus staff worldwide are scientists and economists that are really helping apply pragmatic solutions. And so really, you know, the idea behind opening up a Florida office 3 years ago now was really based on that, of understanding Florida's unique challenges. And then the decision to call St. Petersburg home for that office was also based really in, you know, what kinds of challenges our community is facing.
Yeah. And it's good company, I'd say, as far as, you know, I guess it depends, perhaps on your spectrum, but certainly you couldn't argue that these are really, you know, robust, culturally dense places. Boulder, Austin, Raleigh, Austin and Boston, San Francisco. So, you know, that St. Pete is in the mix there, I think is a badge of honor for the city. And you have a long history in Florida. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So like a lot of folks, I was a Northern transplant. I went to Rollins College for my undergraduate degree after growing up in New York, and then got my master's degree from Florida International University. For about the first 20 years of my career, I worked on Everglades restoration policy at the local, state, and federal government. So I was down in the southeastern part of the state, just really working on making sure that we could restore water flow to America's Everglades, and then did a brief stint with the Miami Foundation, working on what role philanthropy should have in civic engagement and really trying to broaden that space. And that kind of brought me into a lot more of the resilience work around climate, and helped develop things like the Resilient 305 strategy for Miami-Dade County and their city partners. And so, you know, bopped around a little bit, had some time spent in Orlando and down in South Florida, and decided to ultimately raise my family in St. Petersburg when we started this role.
And why, all of these roles have the environment at their center, why?
Florida is one of the most vulnerable places to climate change in the world. And there's so many amazing things. And there's a reason that I've made Florida my home, that you have, you know, made Florida your home, whether that was of origin or a later decision. It has so many resources to offer. And what that actually brings is a real opportunity, because people in Florida are connected to their natural environment. And so they can take a look at the threats and actually turn them around and say, no, we have opportunities. And I think that's where Florida has an opportunity to lead the nation, right? So we can take our risk, we can flip it on its head and showcase what solutions can look like at a global level by being really that bellwether and that example.
And Florida, you know, it's obviously an interesting mix, right? We, you know, politically, it's kind of back and forth. And like you said, it is vulnerable to climate change. As you do your work now, what are the greatest, or what are the strong, what are the biggest hurdles? Is it education? Is it resistance? Is it economics? You know, what is the biggest enemy in this fight?
So I think we've passed the biggest hurdle, which was, you know, really getting folks to understand that climate change was happening. There's now 96% of Floridians are like, yep, it's happening. And the majority of them are sort of witnessing the effects of that already. They understand what the effects will look like in the future if we don't deal with it. So that has been fantastic. I think the second hurdle was really identifying what are the solutions people support. And I think there's a handful that have come, just really risen up as important to people. As electric bills get higher because of natural gas prices, because it's getting hotter and you're running your AC more, it's really, you know, created a kitchen table issue for folks in their personal economy. And all of a sudden, solar isn't just an environmental choice, it's an economic choice. And so making sure that, you know, folks understand the opportunity and the cost savings, not just for putting solar panels on their house, which is great, but actually how we could lower taxes by putting solar panels on government buildings. And we could, you know, pay teachers more if we are saving money on school buses by using electric instead of diesel or propane, right? And so it's trying to make sure that these, you know, quote unquote environmental solutions, you know, are translated, because they actually are economic solutions. And we just, you know, need to be disciplined about showcasing that it's not just the right thing to do environmentally, but it really is a pocketbook issue.
Right. And, you know, on one hand, it's by the time it gets to the kitchen table, you might argue it's not too late, but, you know, once the effects and, you know, the dominoes are starting to move, you know, to get it to the point where it's really affecting the individual's pocketbooks, you know, on one hand, it's gone a little ways down the road. But on the other hand, now, are people more open to other solutions and to really paying attention to things in the future that aren't at the kitchen table yet because they're experiencing these other pocketbook hits?
Well, and, you know, one of the things that we really notice is parents are particularly cued in, right? The folks that are thinking a generation ahead have these issues a little bit more front of mind, because there was a tendency to be like, no, that won't happen in my lifetime. And then you become a parent and your lifetime is no longer the most important thing. And so really looking at kind of, yeah, how do we get ahead of this? And I think for a long time, people were really just overwhelmed at the scale of climate change risk. Now we have pilot projects that show us we can plant mangroves and help combat storm surge. We can, you know, there are things that we can do both to adapt and then to actually mitigate carbon pollution that are real and that are deployable without, you know, use of your imagination, right?
Sure. And when you talk about some of these local solutions, love to get into some of the things EDF is doing locally. One of the big ones, you're partnered with Jason Mathis at the Downtown Partnership to do the Sustainable Leadership Awards, which will be announced on October 25th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're really excited about this. We think that leadership in the private sector is absolutely essential to making progress at scale. And the great part about St. Petersburg is there are so many leaders in the private sector already doing exciting and innovative things. And so we wanted to really tease that story out. People sometimes think about what the cost of solutions is going to be, but you talk to some of these developers and they see it as the opportunity. They talk about, you know, the market wants properties that have recycle programs, that have solar panels, and that there's market demand. And that's what they are responding to. There are, you know, some folks that are making sure that EV charging is sort of part of their landscape. Others are doing great efforts at, instead of just new builds, retrofitting for energy efficiency, water consumption. You know, so there's just a ton of great innovation that we want to tell that story, because it's already happening. It isn't happening because EDF came into the space, but we just really were excited to partner with the Downtown St. Pete Partnership to showcase what's already being done. And really, a lot of this work led before, you know, some recent legislation over the past 12 months that are now going to create a ton of financial resources for private sector to continue down this road. So we're just really, really excited. October 25th, we'll have an awards and forum and just really be able to talk about the good stuff that's happening in St. Petersburg.
And, you know, what are some of the other local efforts, or what's some things we might be able to touch and see here in St. Pete that EDF is working on?
So we are doing a fair bit of work to try to make sure that electric vehicle fleets are adopted. So we'll be working with local government and trying to help, you know, support connections, particularly with school boards, to adopt electric vehicle fleets. And that's great, because I would like to put my child on a clean bus and not have him huffing diesel fuel fumes. But we are Also working at the state level to shape the statewide resilience strategy. And that's going to make a lot of opportunity and funding available for projects in St. Pete and Tampa Bay that help us with mangrove planting and storm surge. All of us in the last week and a half with the rain that St. Pete has experienced are having to come to, you know, some really harsh realities about how we are going to manage these types of weather events going forward. I was at home, just happened to be looking out the window and saw someone drove down my street so fast that the water splashed over my 6-foot fence.
Wow.
You know, so there was significant flooding on the road, and I know that it's been a real challenge. And we want to make sure that we have, you know, just the right nature-based combination engineered solutions so that, you know, we're not flooding.
Right.
And that St. Pete is a peninsula on a peninsula where it's particularly vulnerable to those sorts of circumstances, and knock on wood, have, you know, avoided a Category 5 storm, but we need to make sure that we're ready.
And for your own, you know, sort of personal journey in your career, you know, you have the you know, the real just nuts and bolts, you know, there's flooding and water coming over my 6-foot fence to, you know, working on the Everglades, which is a really big project. What's been the balance for you, or maybe the evolution for you with regard to sort of boots on the ground, you know, really implementing solutions versus getting more political, doing more, you know, economic and political work kind of at scale? What's been that progression for you?
So I started off my career doing grassroots organizing, really getting folks to sort of go out and teaching them how to advocate on issues that were important to them. At that time, it was the urban development boundary in Miami-Dade County was under threat of expanse that would have been a real risk to potential homeowners in that space because it was flood prone and also a real risk for Everglades restoration. So that first sort of experience of working with, you know, face-to-face with the people who would most be impacted and then helping them understand how you show up at your county commission, how you self-advocate was really formative because that's where it has to start. It doesn't start because some nonprofit has taken a position. It starts with people and how they're impacted. And as long as you are, you know, making sure that you're authentically representing the needs and the desires of the communities you're in, and that's fundamental to EDF being in Florida, you will be successful because the people that are at the decision-making level need to be accountable to their, you know, residents and voters. And that's where we really, you know, all things are sort of political when you're working in policy, but also they're not. We see, you know, 75% of Floridians saying, Florida needs a climate independent energy plan. So the partisan stuff comes from the, you know, the news headlines and the people fundraising for politics. The solution sets are really rooted in people's lives and with support. And so we've actually been able to kind of, you know, stay out of that fray. EDF is a bipartisan organization, and we'll work with anyone who wants to help advance solutions. And I think that's really, you know, that's the key. This is, you know, St. Pete is not just a place where I work. It's the place where I'm raising my family. And that's really important. These issues are personally important. It's not a job I get to clock out on at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. And so when you're organizing at the grassroots level and, you know, there's that mix of people needing to feel the effects, but there's also their capacity to learn about the potential effects and act on that. But they're also hearing other information as well. So, you know, how formidable is the machine of, you know, alternate information? Or, you know, obviously for a long time, there was the machine of climate change isn't real. You know, the machine of capitalism, or I should say, you know, economy first. And so those sorts of things, is that something that's declined, or is it still going strong? What's your sort of experience with that in the last couple of years?
I will say in Florida, that ship has sailed. Folks are, you know, they're seeing firsthand the changes. Whether you're talking to a fisherman or a farmer or just a regular homeowner, I mean, we're seeing record heat indexes year after year those are having crop impacts. I mean, the felt reality is already here. And so it's really taken away any of that, battle about what is real and what do we need to do. Now it's just, okay, how do we get to the place where we have the resources to get it done? And that's where EDF can be a real connector in, you know, taking these federal dollars that are now available and helping communities access them.
And that's going to feel pretty amazing to now be able to really align and get people all working towards a common goal and putting all the resources in one direction.
Some of this is such low-hanging fruit, Joe. It's really hard to understand why it hasn't been done. Florida lacks in energy efficiency. It's, you know, on the bottom of the list of states. That is the simplest way we can protect our families as well as our economy to use less energy. So why wouldn't we incentivize making our power grid and our homes much more efficient? And now there's money available to help us all do that, whether it's a private sector level or your own home.
So what's one? What's the thing? If anybody watching this wants to take action, what's the one thing you'd advise them to do?
Well, certainly come visit us at letstackleclimatechangeflorida.com. We have, that's where we kind of keep resources available. It's just, you can always reach out to us, get engaged, sign up for our newsletter. We can continue to sort of share what opportunities are available. I think on the personal level, take a moment to figure out how these issues affect you. And it is always important to talk to your lawmakers about it. Really use your voice because they are going to listen. And we see it year after year. We've seen really sound policy start to move in ways that really were thought impossible just a few years ago. And it's people that are driving that. And it's Floridians that are driving that.
Great. Well, we'll look forward to seeing who takes home the green on October 25th. And make sure to report all the winners in the Catalyst, and appreciate you taking the time to share a little bit about what you're working on, keep fighting the good fight.
Thanks, Joe. And thanks for elevating the stories in St. Pete.
Thanks, Dawn.